All right, hi, I'm Tyler Harder, and today I'm going to be talking about procrastination. Fortunately, I just finished my slides. Slacker is joint work with Brandon Salmon and Rose Liu at Tentry, and my advisors Andre Arpachi-Dussault and Remzi Arpachi-Dussault at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Containers are becoming extremely popular. We have new local execution engines, operating systems, and cluster managers all built around containers. All the many tech giants have their own in-house container management systems, and there are many new containerized cloud services. In theory, containers are extremely lightweight. Starting a container should be just like starting a process. Unfortunately, in practice, there are huge overheads to starting containers. In a recent Google publication, the Googlers found that the median container startup time was 25 seconds. Diving into this problem, they found that they often have to install packages before their container starts, and that package installation causes a lot of contention for the local desk. So they've been giving this problem significant attention. So why should Google care? 25 seconds doesn't seem that long. Well, if you can have faster startup time, you can do a lot of interesting things like handle flash crowd events, load balance with fine granularity, and interactively develop your applications. So in this work, we make three contributions. First, we build HelloBench, a new benchmark for stressing container startup based on 57 container workloads. Second, we use HelloBench to do analysis, and we have a number of findings. One finding is that 76% of the startup time is spent just copying and installing these images. And unfortunately, startup only really requires 6% of that data, so there's a lot of waste going on. So based on these and other findings, we build a new Docker storage driver called Slacker. Slacker lazily pulls only the data that's necessary for startup, and it also leverages extensions of both the Linux kernel and NFS server to achieve 5 to 20 times speedups. So here's an outline. I'm going to give some background on containers and Docker. We'll look at some common container workloads. I'll show how the default Docker storage driver works at UFS, how our own works, evaluate them head-to-head, and then conclude. So why should we use containers? Containers are trendy, and there's a lot of hype around them, and I think the newness belies the fact that they're actually a very efficient solution to a very old problem in systems. In particular, we have this goal of sharing physical hardware between multiple applications, and to do that correctly, we need to make sure that B doesn't crash and take down the whole system, B shouldn't be able to hog resources, and B shouldn't be able to steal A's data. So one way to achieve all these goals is virtualization. Virtualization is just using namespaces and scheduling to provide the illusion of private resources. In the beginning, we had process virtualization. We would use tricks like virtual memory to isolate within an operating system. And while this is fast, it was incomplete because important resources like ports and the file system were not virtualized. So people said, hey, if we can't isolate within an operating system, let's isolate around the operating system. So what people would do is they run each application on its own operating system, which is running on its own virtual machine. So this is complete, but it's slow. There are a lot of well-known overheads here. So more recently, people are circling back to process virtualization, and they're adding virtualization for all these features we wish we had always had, such as ports of the file system. So, and they're rebranding this process virtualization as container virtualization. So while these new techniques promise to be fast and complete, in practice, there are many storage challenges that we must overcome. So our group at Wisconsin has been working on a number of these challenges. It turns out that crash isolation and performance isolation did a lot harder when you have multiple containers sharing the same local file system. Today I'm going to be talking about the file system provisioning problem. How can we rapidly create a new file system for each new container? Okay, so let's take a look at Docker. Docker is just a deployment tool built on top of containers. Docker defines an application by a file system image, which makes sense because your file system will contain things like your application binary and shared libraries. Docker is based on a version control model, meaning that you can extend images by committing additional files and deploy your applications by pushing and pulling these images. So let's take an example of a LAMP container. So our first commit might be all the files in Ubuntu Linux. A second commit might be all the files in Apache. A third, MySQL, and fourth, PHP. If we want to deploy this, we could push it to a central registry, such as the Docker Hub or a private registry on our network. And then if we wanted to run it, other workers could pull these down and run them. So in the Docker language, the term layer refers to either a commit or a container scratch space that we give a running container. So let me walk you through an example. Here I have a worker with the four layers of a LAMP stack, and I have a registry and a number of other workers. I want to run LAMP on all my worker machines. So first what we'll do is we'll use a push operation to copy these layers over the network. So here's a big copy. And then we can use a pull operation on all the workers to copy these layers down one at a time over the network. And now each of these workers understands how to convert these layers into a root file system that it can hand a container. So hopefully what you can see is if we want to study this new distribution pattern, we really need to have new benchmarks that stress, push, pull, and run times. So towards that end, we build a new benchmark called HelloBench that stresses container startup. HelloBench is based on 57 images from the Docker Hub, and for each of these, it will stress startup by doing a simple Hello World-like task. So for example, I might, and if I have a Python image, I might execute a program that says Hello World, or if I have a server, it might return a web page that says Hello World. In each case, we're going to wait until the container is either done or ready. Some things like the Python image might just stop running, and I can measure that time. But if I have a web server, that will tend to run forever. So what we'll do is HelloBench will identify the point at which it starts doing useful work on this timeline, and that's what we'll measure. So HelloBench spits out a couple interesting numbers. First, it measures something that I'm calling the development cycle. So if you're a programmer, you are going to have to make changes to your application, push it, pull it, and then run it whenever you want to test in a distributed way. So we measure that. The other interesting time to measure is something called the deployment cycle. Even if you're not actively programming, you might have to occasionally do a pull and run on new machines, perhaps to handle a flash crowd or rebalancing. So we break the HelloBench images across these six categories that I'm showing here, and I'll use these whenever I present a bar graph, I'll break them along these six categories. So let's use HelloBench to do some analysis. I'm going to ask three questions here. First of which is, how is data distributed across different Docker layers? So what I'm going to show here is a tree of all the commits that we used to build up HelloBench. So each of the red circles on the right, each leaf represents a HelloBench image, and all of the white circles represent intermediate layers that were used to commit up to that. So let's look at how bytes of data are distributed across all those layers. So here I have a mass function where along the x-axis I have layer depth, and along the y-axis I have a percentage of data. In terms of bytes. So what you can see is that while there's definitely a skew to the left, a lot of data is really deep. About half of the data is at depth 9 or greater. Design application, we need to figure out how to somehow flatten these layers at runtime to avoid linear overheads. Second, how much data is needed during container startup? So for this, we're going to take a couple measurements. The first measurement is I just measure at the block level how many unique bytes of data are read. And I show that by the six gray bars and the average on the far right. And we can see that on average, a container only needs 27 megabytes of reads to start up. So I'm going to compare that number to the image size. So we ship data over the network. We ship these images over the network compressed. So that's what I'm showing with this red bar. And we see that relative to the reads, we have a 5.5 times network amplification. So we're shipping a lot more data over the network than we need. It's worse, though, because after it goes over the network, we write it to local disk decompressed. So I'm going to show the decompressed sizes here. And now we see on average, we have 15 times overhead. Another way of looking at that number is that we can say only 6.4% of the uncompressed data is actually needed during startup. Design amplification, we should get away from these prefetching pulls and somehow lazily fetch data as needed. Third, how similar are reads between multiple runs? So for this experiment, I run every HelloBench image twice. The first time I populate a cache, the second time I use that cache and measure misses and hits. So the misses are in blue and they don't really show up because there are very few. Basically, 99% of reads during the second run could be serviced by a cache. Design implication is that we should somehow figure out how to share cache state between multiple containers that start from the same image. Okay, so now I'm going to show you how the default driver in Docker AUFS stores all this container data. Okay, so the AUFS driver is based on the AUFS file system, another union file system. Union file systems don't store data directly on disk. They store it in an underlying file system such as ext4. So how does the driver use the AUFS file system? What it will do is it stores each Docker layer in its own ext4 directory uncompressed. And then when you want to run a container, it uses a union mount over these directories to create a composite view of the whole image. So I'm going to walk you through some examples with push, pull, and run. So here I have my AUFS driver, and it has a number of directories, each of which represents a layer. So here I have one layer with A, B, C in it. So these are just files or directories. And let's say I want to push this to make it public. So what the AUFS driver will do is it will compress these on a push to this tar-gz, which will ship off across the network to the central registry. And now, of course, once this is public, people can build on top of that layer. And let's say they've done that, and we want to pull down their extensions. So we have a pull. So now we'll have that incoming file. And what we can do with that then is we'll decompress it to XYZ. Okay, so now let's say we want to run this XYZ container. AUFS driver will have to create some scratch space for it, which it does in the form of an empty directory. And so then to merge all these three layers together, it will use a union mount with the AUFS file system. So I'm going to walk you through some reads and writes to this AUFS file system. Let's say we have a read to B. AUFS will iterate over these directories until it finds it on that second level, and it'll send the read there. Or let's say we have a read to X. We'll iterate until we find it on the bottom level and send the read there. Now, all writes have to go to the scratch space, so you're probably wondering what happens if we want to modify a file in a lower layer. Say, let's say we want to append one byte to Z. In this case, AUFS will copy Z to the topmost layer before it lets the write proceed. So what you can see is that AUFS is doing copy on write at file granularity. So let's look at some of the performance implications of this design. I'm going to show some plots for both the AUFS file system itself and then the AUFS storage driver. So here I've done two experiments. On the left, I create empty files across 16 different levels that are all unioned together, and then I correlate the time it takes to open a file along the y-axis with the depth of a file on the x-axis. And as you can see, as we get deeper, open gets slower. That makes sense because if you recall, AUFS is iterating over all these directories. On the right, I just have two layers, and I create a large file on the bottom layer, sizes along the x-axis, and I append only one byte to that file. And then I measure the latency of that one byte append on the y-axis. And you can see as we're appending to a larger file, the append gets slower because we have to do this very large copy on write. Okay, so let's take, so what we see here is that deep data is slow, which is unfortunate because our analysis showed that most data is deep for containers. So now let's look at the AUFS storage driver, which uses the AUFS file system. So I run the HelloBench images, all 57 of them, and I get push, pull, and run times for each spread across these six categories. And what we see is that push and pull are really slow because we have to copy all this data over the network, whereas run tends to be quite fast. It doesn't take that long to start up a container. So I'll just highlight two numbers here. If we want to do the deployment cycle, we have to do a pull and a run. So if we compare that, we can infer that 76% of a non-local run will be spent on pulling before we even start running. Okay, so let's take a look at how we could solve these problems with the Slacker driver. So Slacker has a number of goals. We want to make push and pull really fast. We want to utilize the powerful primitives of a modern storage server, in this case a 10-tree VM store. And we want Slacker to be a drop-in replacement for AUFS, so we are not trying to modify the Docker framework itself. So I'm going to walk through a number of design features of Slacker here, the first of which is that we want to do lazy pull. So I'm going to contrast this design with AUFS here on the left. With AUFS, each registry and worker has its own local disk, and the registry will be storing images on those disks, and the worker will be storing containers, which means that when we want to push and pull, we have to do a lot of copying, both over the network and to and from these local disks. In contrast, Slacker on the right, we use the same 10-tree VM store to store images and containers for all our registries and workers. So this centralized storage makes it possible to easily share data between different servers. So let's take a closer look at Slacker. And let's say that this worker wants to run a container. What it'll do is it will allocate one NFS file for its one container. It'll use the loopback module in Linux to treat that file as a virtual disk. It will then mount ext4 on top of that virtual disk, and then it'll hand ext4 as a root file system to that container. So now this is nice because as the container sends reads to ext4, we'll only be fetching the blocks as needed from the NFS file. Okay, so now I'm going to walk you through more how we map various Slacker abstractions onto VM store abstractions. And in particular, we want to leverage copy on write within the VM store. So VM store provides copy on write via two functions, snapshot and flown. And these operations do block granularity copy on write. So hopefully you can see how this will be hopefully solve some of the problems that AUFS had with the very coarse-grained file copy on write. Okay, so VM store's functions are snapshot and clone. Snapshot takes an NFS file, and from that it creates a read-only snapshot, and it'll return an ID for that snapshot. Clone is the inverse. It will take one of these snapshot IDs, and from that create a modifiable NFS file. So here's how we map the abstractions. Each NFS file corresponds to one container. Each snapshot corresponds to one image. A clone provisions container storage from an image, and snapshot creates an image from a container, say if you run Docker commit. So I'll walk you through these in detail. Here, this worker is running a container on top of an NFS file, and we want to commit this container to an image and then share it so other people can pull and run it. So the worker will send a snapshot to VM store. VM store will do copy on write internally at block granularity to produce snapshot with IDN. It'll send N back over the network, so just a very small piece of metadata here. The worker will send A to the registry, and then, so another small transfer. The registry will associate that image with snapshot N. So this is a big difference than from the traditional way the registry is used. Usually the registry stores a lot of large image data. We're just using it as a name server that associates layer metadata with snapshot IDs. So the registry will never actually do VM store IO. Now let's say somebody wants to pull and run this image. Worker B will fetch in over the network, use that to do a VM store clone, get a new NFS file, and then run the container on top of that. Okay. Second feature that we want to do is we want to do layer flattening to avoid the linear overheads that AUFS faced. So what we're going to do is we're going to smush all the layers together at the file namespace level, and then we're going to reintroduce copy on write at the block level so we can still have the advantages of copy on write. So in both of these, on the AUFS and Slacker design, you can see that we have the layers in the middle, but on the AUFS, we're doing copy on write above these layers, and on Slacker, we're doing it below. What that means is that, let's say I have A, B, C, D in my image. With AUFS, A, B, C, D will be spread across all these layers, whereas with Slacker, they'll tend to accumulate. The first layer will be A, then A, B, A, B, C, A, B, C, D, since we're doing copy on write at the lowest levels of the system. So this gets interesting because Docker assumes we have this layout where the data are spread across all these layers, but our actual layout is these layers built on top of each other. What this means is that with the assumed layout, you need all the layers to be able to run, but with our Slacker layout, any individual layer is runnable in and of itself. So this is problematic because Docker thinks it needs to pull all these layers to run, but a lot of these, the ones I'm highlighting on the right, are actually not necessary in our case. So I'll go into more details. There are more details in the paper, but basically we use a technique called lazy cloning, whereas if Docker tries to force our driver to pull these layers, we'll delay doing that until they're actually needed, and they'll usually never be needed. So third, we want to somehow share cache state because our analysis indicated that that would be useful. It's not obvious why sharing cache is tricky, so I'll walk you through an example. I have this image here on the left, which contains blocks A, B, C, and from that we've cloned two NFS files, ABX and ABY. So these are storage for two different containers. So they're similar since they started from the same image, but also you can see X and Y are different because these containers are writing data as they run. So above this, we have an NFS client, which is part of the Docker worker. So let's say the first container reads the first block of its file, so we'll fetch A over the network. And now let's say that the second container wants to read a similar piece of data. So in theory, we already have this data on the client side, but the NFS client doesn't know that, so it's going to fetch that same data over the network. So we have two goals here. We want to avoid wasting cache space, and we want to avoid doing unnecessary I.O. So you might think we could just do some simple cache dedupe on the client side, and while that would save cache space, it wouldn't eliminate the I.O. because you have to do the two I.O.s before you realize you have the same data. So again, there are more details in the paper, but basically what we're going to do is we're going to keep bitmaps on the client side that are going to keep track of the similarities and differences between these files, so that then when we see, hey, these two blocks are the same, we don't have to do the same I.O. twice. Okay, so let's compare the AUFS storage driver to the Slacker storage driver. I'm going to ask two questions. First, what are the deployment and development speedups? And second, what is the long-term performance? So first, what I do is for all 57 images, I measure the AUFS time and the Slacker time, and I divide those to get a speed up, and I plot the speed up along the x-axis. Along the y-axis, we have a cumulative distribution function. So for example, to read this, if I want to look at the median speed ups, I look at the 50th percentile, and I see that Slacker has a 5.3 times speed up for the deployment cycle, which is just this push and run, or pull and run, and it has a 20 times speed up for the development cycle, which involves push, pull, and run. So you can also see from the CDF that there's quite a big spread of speedups. And while we never really make anything slower, there are some containers that especially benefit from Slacker. So if we look at the 10% of containers that benefit most, up at the 90th percentile, we can see that some containers are getting speedups of 16 times or 63 times. Second, how is the long-term performance? So there are a lot more details in the paper. In short, we run four server workloads, two databases and two web servers. We wait until they're well started up, and then we see what the throughput is over a 5-minute period. I won't go into details here, but in short, Slacker is always at least as fast as AUFS. What this means is that we get all these benefits from being lazy. We can start up faster, but there's no long-term performance penalty for that. So we can have fast startup without sacrificing long-term performance. So to conclude, containers are inherently lightweight, but some of these frameworks like Docker that are built around them are not currently lightweight. The key to getting fast startup is to doing copy on write, not just within a node, but between multiple workers on the same cluster. So given that, this has driven us to a design where we use shared storage, and we'll utilize VM store snapshot and clone on the back end. So based on this new design, with Slacker, we can get a 5 times deployment speed up and 20 times development speed ups. Thank you. Any questions?
Very interesting idea. But looking at it, I think that virtual machines, I would imagine that there are virtual machines over distributed file systems that already do this kind of lazy pool. Is that right? If so, there's any comparison with them?
Yeah, they definitely do. So I think one way to look at it is that containers are inherently lightweight, but they don't really have all of these optimized frameworks around them, whereas virtual machines are kind of inherently more heavyweight, but we spend a lot more time optimizing the tools. So I definitely think it's fair to say that we're borrowing ideas from the virtual machine world. And of course, sometimes those ideas have to be modified slightly to deal with things like the Docker framework. But definitely, like saying that we related work for our paper, we'll cite some of those things where this idea of kind of lazy propagation is not our contribution. It's kind of applying it to containers and then dealing with the framework issues is what we contribute. Good question.
Yeah. Very timely work, I think. I wonder if you, why did you pick AOFS as your baseline? Did you try any other graph drivers like OverlayFS or Device Mapper snapshot in target?
I played with those a little bit, not like actually produced the same comprehensive results. I think in short, like say that using DevMapper, you could avoid some of the AOFS problems you have with the file granularity copy on write. But the thing that all these other drivers have in common is that you're doing all the copying back and forth over the network, and also you have to tar and untar all these things. So basically the way these are designed, none of them can really solve that fast push and pull problem, although some of them like DevMapper could solve some of AUFS's issues.
Right, so they just have a really big spectrum in their performance, right, within each other, so the specific numbers by how much you're better might differ.
That would make sense definitely for one, but for push and pull, it shouldn't make a difference because like most of the work is tarring and untarring and copying.
Yeah. I was actually going to add to the other questioner's comment about the ButterFS graph driver.
Mm-hmm.
Curious if you could comment on performance of the ButterFS graph driver compared to yours, excepting for the pushing and pulling part.
Mm-hmm. I haven't measured that. My guess is that it should certainly be faster than AUFS because we won't have that kind of file granularity copy on write. It would be interesting to see how that design compares for just like run without like doing the push and pull.
One more question.
Yeah.
Do you have any plans or any idea about how you would handle the pushing? Like when you have more containers that can basically that scale beyond the capacity of a single tentree box?
Yeah, definitely. So this is a similar problem that, say, Tentree runs into with virtual machines because people have more virtual machines and work on a single box. So the idea is that eventually, we haven't built this, but you would have many VM stores and many Docker workers, and there's no reason you couldn't modify Slacker where it could be storing data across different VM stores. Now, of course, there might be certain edge cases where you have to have the slower push and pull because maybe if you want to run an image on one machine where it's not. So they've been looking into things like that because all these similar problems arise with virtual machines. So they have ways to synchronously replicate data between the VM stores and kind of like build more distributed systems around that. So that would be future work.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.